You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. One of the very, very best ways to enjoy a Michigan summer is to park yourself under a tree or on a beach and get lost in a good book. So let's get some great picks for your summer reading as we welcome poet Keith Taylor. He has just retired as creative writing teacher at the University of Michigan, and we should note has just published another chapbook called Ecstatic Destinations, written about his Ann Arbor neighborhood. Keith Taylor, let's talk books.
All right, Cindy, let's go.
And these are all written by Michigan authors?
They're all people who have connections to Michigan.
Okay.
I can explain those if you want.
Sure.
Nick Dybeck, the first one, grew up in Kalamazoo, did his undergraduate degree at the University of Michigan, then left for that famous Iowa writer's school and now teaches in Oregon, I think. And he's the son of Stuart Dybeck, one of our famous short story writers from back in the day.
All right, so it's in the blood. And his book starts us off in the aftermath of World War I.
It does. It's one of those historical novels that's in this great tradition of historical novels.
And what is the title?
The Verdun Affair. So when you do a novel like this, clearly you do a lot of research, and he's done that. So there's the history, and then the novelist gets to infest that history with vibrant characters, which is kind of fun. These novels often end up being about memory, and they often end up being about the changing identities of the main characters who are changed by the history they're involved with. So in this one, there's a young man, well, actually a boy, he's 15 when he first goes to France right in 1915, and his father's a doctor working on the front lines with the American Field Service, that the doctors were there several years before the American Army showed up. So, and his doctor brings him over and he has his son with him on the front lines. Father dies. Tom stays in France and he lives with priests who have the responsibility of honoring the nameless dead. So after the war, he stays around. And he stays right in Verdun. So he stayed. Verdun was the largest battle in World War I, lasted almost a year.
Terrible battle.
Yeah, over a million casualties, hundreds of thousands killed, and most of them blasted apart. You couldn't recognize most of the bodies. So he would walk around the fields of battle and collect bones, which then get placed in a giant ossuary, which will then be sacralized and become a memorial. It's grim work. So for years after the war, families and friends come to the battlefield with an impossible hope that they can find word of their missing loved ones. The love interest, Sarah, she comes too, even though she understands the impossibility better than some of them, and then she and Tom have the affair that is in the title. Soon, however, they leave for Italy, also a place where there was major battles, not the horrible trench warfare of France, but major battles. And there's a famous amnesiac who got a lot of attention in the press, and I think that's a historical moment. And Sarah thinks he might be her husband. Tom has constructed, because Tom's in love with her, he's constructed stories and lies that support her hopes, partly so he can be with her. So that's complicated enough. And then, of course, there are also lots of other complications. But he also gives us small moments in Tom's later life where he works as a writer in Hollywood in 1950. Dramatic contrast.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So do you have
an excerpt for us? I do.
Because you reading to me is one of my favorite things about doing Stateside.
Well, we can just start doing it. This is a little moment. So he can, with all that research, he can construct these moments. This could be considered a first date. So they go out and they go to a beat up circus, which really doesn't have much right after the war, but it does have dancing bears. And this is just a beautiful description Dybeck wrote about these dancing bears. The man with the blue handkerchief had already jumped from his seat and fallen on his backside. He was trying to pedal backward through the mud. The bears, by the way, have changed their demeanor toward the audience. That's what's making him do that. The bear blurred toward the front of the stage, and somehow I knew, and it wasn't just the narcissism of fear, that the bear was coming straight for us. Not the crowd, but Sarah and me. I put my arm across her chest, but couldn't find the strength in my legs. And then the bear was before us, directly before us. And I could feel Sarah against my arm, stiff as the dead but blaring heat. The bear reared on his hind legs. We were close enough to smell its breath of earth and meat. Then the bear smiled. He smiled. The corners of his mouth turned up like a man's. He smiled and galloped back to the three trainers and the other bear, the men standing with straight backs, then the five of them bowing to the crowd.
Ooh, that's good.
And I picked that because it's kind of, it's indicative of the kinds of things he can do, which is amazing.
Wonderful. And now we're going to poetry.
Yeah, now this would be both the novels, that one and the novel we'll talk about in a minute, are certainly summer reads. This is a wonderful book of poems, but it's heavy. You have to make an investment in this. involved with some of those same questions of identity that get into the historical novels, but this, of course, is in contemporary poetry, so it's different. This is Tarfia Faizullah, Registers of Illuminated Villages. Tarfia Faizullah is from Midland, Texas. She grew up there, and then she has that sort of classic Texas twang in her speech. But she is a first-generation child of Bangladeshi-American parents. Her first collection of poems was based on a good deal of research and historical interviews in Bangladesh, where she talked with women who'd been systematically raped during the Bangladesh War for Independence in the early 70s. Faizullah's poems don't simply record the facts or quote the subjects, but inhabit the material in a kind of profound and intimate way. This new collection, Registers of Illuminated Village, takes up some of the same ideas of the first, but are mostly placed in America, mostly placed in Faizullah's experience of this country as a brown-skinned Muslim girl, then woman, in post-9/11 America. Her parents in Texas send her to a private Episcopal school where she was the only Muslim and where she learned to say all the prayers. I am an infidel in this classroom church. I kneel with the other, restless on the cracked leather kneeler.
Whew.
And here's a little prose poem about the experience of prejudice, even before the most obvious waves of it were released after 9/11. So just try to imagine a child hearing this kind of thing. It's called Your Own Country. That wasn't the same day two towers staggered into the ground. You were warned they'd be hunting us, but you didn't want to be soft. There's a first day you learn a country can't be earned. Your heart's embarrassed. Ishuf. It is soft. It isn't soft at all. A shiny pickup drives past. Go back to your own country, they holler. A firecracker lit, then thrown. There's a first day you learn ours and theirs. The girl with curious fingers says hello. Her friends scorn, you'll get whatever they have. The skylight pours down, all that white at home. What about the poor people in our country? Do you want to be like them? Is that it? Then go, go. There's a first day you learn how to kill yourself without dying. Your own country demands it. This isn't new. It isn't news.
Boy, that's harsh.
Yeah, she's dealing with the big subjects, real big subjects.
Does she live in Michigan now?
She lived here until a month ago. She taught at U of M for 4 years. She had a lovely position for young poets and then left and is now going to be teaching at the Art Institute of Chicago School. So she's not going far away.
Not at all.
Right.
And now we turn to a debut novel.
A debut novel, Lillian Lee, who does live in Michigan now. She just finished her MFA, and even though her first book is out, she still feels she needs a day job, so she works over at Literati Bookshop right here in Ann Arbor. This book, it's called The Number One Chinese Restaurant. As the title might suggest, it's another immigrant story. This one's a multi-generational tale about Chinese immigrants and their restaurant, the Beijing Duck House, outside Washington. There's some gentle humor in this book, but there's also a lot of love. One of the younger characters says, every day at a Chinese restaurant was bring your kid to work day.
Which is nice. True. Yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah. But you can't get the wrong impression. This is a serious book about the way these people have learned to live and work in America. The majority culture, even though it surrounds these people and provides the context for their success at business, plays almost no role in their lives or in this book, although it rewards and punishes. But there are deep loyalties between these people, loyalties that cover two continents and traverse a very large ocean, loyalties that govern actions of the characters, even when they know they might be doing something harmful or destructive. And there's a lot of action in Lee's novel, often page-turning, dramatic action. I don't want to give essentials away, but there are moments of betrayal, moments of violence, moments of fear, and there are ways these are resolved and how the characters are sustained by their community. And here's this lovely little moment of cooking in a Chinese restaurant. He cranked the burner as high as it would go until the air in front of his face shimmered with heat. Then he dropped his ladle into the drum of peanut oil by the wok, pouring it straight into the pan. Always more oil, he demanded. More, even more. He swirled the oil around in his wok, coating the entire surface, then poured the oil back into the drum. Filling his ladle partway again, he wet the wok with one more splash of oil and cracked eggs into the gleaming puddle. Stirring the yellow around, he grabbed a container of rice, dumped it in, mixing the rice into the oil and eggs. He lifted the wok with his left hand. One heavy flick, and the rice transformed into a wave, cresting over the edge of the rim and breaking back down into the corner of the pan. Again, do it until your wrist breaks.
somebody knows her restaurant Chinese cooking, somebody doesn't has done she? That.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah,
yeah, I can tell you're very enthused about these books.
I am. Yes, those are wonderful. They're wonderful books. And the novels, of course, are what people look for in summer reads. Book of Poems is a worthwhile, is certainly going to repay a close reading.
And we cannot let you go, Keith Taylor, without having you read a poem or so from your new chapbook, Ecstatic Destinations, which is about your neighborhood in Ann Arbor.
It is. It all started with, you know, as I get to a certain age, Cindy, I've got to walk around to get a little thing. So I walk the triangle, Dexter Road to North Maple, down North Maple, back on Jackson, about a mile and a half.
Okay.
Sometimes I walk very slowly and I stop and talk to everybody and I stop and watch people at the skate park and people playing baseball. And so, you know, it's sort of all added up. As you can tell by looking at me, I'm really not very active in sports, but if you live in Ann Arbor, you have to be. And there are sports all the way through this little book, which is kind of fun. And of course, this one, which everybody in Ann Arbor knows, Football Saturday. The lights stay green for 5 minutes at a stretch so the cars coming in from the north can keep the school flags flying from their back windows. A maple leaf, burnt sienna, catches in my beard, and two vultures riding what thermals they can find after the night of first frost turn above me, looking for carrion. When our team loses badly, the streets are quieter, filled with gentle sadness, subdued, humble.
Very true.
Yep.
Well, just to recap our summer picks from our wonderful, wonderful Keith Taylor, we have The Verdun Affair by Nick Dybeck. We have Registers of Illuminated Villages by Tarfia Fazula. And Number One Chinese Restaurant by Lillian Lee, the debut novel. And, of course, Ecstatic Destinations by my guest Keith Taylor. And if you were not able to write these titles down, no worries, because we've got them on the stateside page at michiganradio.org just for you. Keith Taylor, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy.